welcome to the Semiconductor Insiders Podcast Series. The goal of this podcast is to bring semiconductor experts together to get to the truth about the matter at hand. We'll get right to the point and not exceed 30 minutes of your time. If you have a topic you would like us to cover, please post it on semiwiki.com and we'll get right to it. Now let's start with introductions and the topic for today. My name is Daniel Nenny and I'm the founder of semiwiki.com, the open forum for semiconductor professionals. Since going online in 2011, semiwiki.com has experienced more than 4 million users. If you're not a member of the SemiWiki community, please register as my guest. I hope to see you there. Professionally, I have spent my entire career in the semiconductor industry with an emphasis on the fabless semiconductor ecosystem. It's been an incredible experience traveling the world, working with the foundries, EDA, IP, and the top semiconductor companies. When I'm not working, I'm sailing the San Francisco Bay and out the Golden Gate. It's a pirate's life for me. My podcast partner is Mike Gianfagna.
Thanks, Dan. I've been in ASIC and EDA since the beginning. I had a front row seat as these industries created revolutions in our world. Overall, I've spent about half my time as an ASIC supplier and half as an EDA supplier in all kinds of roles. Now, I'm helping established and emerging companies to hone their business and having a lot of fun with that.
Okay, the matter at hand today is, why are semiconductors so sexy? Semiconductors are definitely a hot topic, but that was not always the case. When I started my career, we made semiconductors for large-scale computer systems, which were hiding in computer centers somewhere, out of sight, out of mind, right? As a result, my family and friends really had no idea what I did for a living. But now we're surrounded by semiconductors in just about every aspect of our lives, right, Mike?
Yeah, it's true. I have a similar experience. I started my career at RCA, actually in design automation when it wasn't an industry yet. Those were the days when large IDMs had to write the software internally. And I tell my friends what I did and they like gave me a blank look like, what is that? Oh, those are chips? Those go in bombs, right? Oh, you're a baby killer. So it was kind of amusing to hear the bad and misinformation that was out there. It took a while for that to change. ASIC certainly changed it. And AI changed it even more. So yeah, it's a continuum from what was that to I know what that is.
Right. And you know, back in the day, systems companies drove the semiconductor industry. So the computer firms really were the big drivers during my career. And you know, all the computer companies had fabs and they did all their own chips. And you know, that gave them a unique approach to the chip design and it fit with their software and their end application, their electronic system, but it was very expensive. So that really was a pretty high barrier to entry. You had to have your own fab and your own chip making abilities just to make a system. But that changed when the IDMs came around and Intel is the most famous one and the predominant one still today. But we also had Texas Instruments, we had Motorola, there was dozens of different IDMs that had their own fabs and they made chips for everybody else. So they made general purpose chips that everybody can use. And what that really did was that made the electronic systems companies boom because anybody could build an electronic device. You just grab these chips off the shelf and away you go. The next disruption that we experienced was the transformation to the fabless business model. And I documented this in my book, Fabless, the Transformation of the Semiconductor Industry. And you know what happened is we came up with this concept of foundries where people would just manufacture chips for other companies. So anybody could design a chip. I mean, you could design a chip on a cocktail napkin, throw it over the fence to the foundry and you would get a chip back. And you know, again, this lowered the barrier to entry for semiconductor devices. Anybody could design a semiconductor. And if you look at the fabless companies today, we're all familiar with them, I think, NVIDIA, Broadcom, Qualcomm. You know, these are the big domineering companies that brought us all these different devices. What we're seeing now though, is things have kind of come full circle. System companies are doing their own chips again. And you know, Apple is the best example. They do their own SoC. They make everything and they tailor it to the software and they emulate and simulate the devices to get them out quickly and fast and efficiently. And so they have a tremendous competitive advantage and now other companies are having to follow. So other companies like Huawei and Samsung are making their own SoCs and their own chips for their electronic devices. And we've even gone a step further with big systems companies like Google and Amazon and Facebook. And even Tesla is making their own chips, which is one of the first car companies that made chips. Usually the car companies buy them from the supply chain. The difference is that these system companies, they don't sell chips. So these aren't, you know, done on a restricted budget, you know, with cost cuttings and savings to get better margins on the chip. They're selling entire systems, which are a thousand or thousands of dollars. You know, in the case of Google and Amazon, I think that's unique because they're just using it internally for their cloud infrastructure. And they are spending huge amounts of money developing these chips, much more than your average fabless company. So, you know, that's the transformation. But now these chip companies and system companies are providing devices that are very personal to us, right? They're everywhere. They're in our pockets. They're on our wrists. They're in our cars. They're in our homes. Where can you go without a semiconductor in control of some aspect of your life?
Yeah, you know, that's a good historical perspective, Dan. I agree with you completely. If I think about it, you know, when the fabless model kicked in, it's sort of like the disaggregation of the semiconductor industry. The IDMs became disaggregated and the pieces were out there. There was EDA, there was IP, there was package, there was assembly, there was test, there was design. And, you know, ASIC certainly was born out of that. I kind of view those as kind of the golden days of ASIC and semiconductor because there were so many startups. You know, that's kind of in the 90s, roughly. It's probably a little broader than that, but that's a good place to start. You saw so many startups, so many new companies. It didn't take a whole lot to build a chip company because all the pieces were out there. I kind of view that as the democratization of chips when everybody could do it. It wasn't a rich man's game. Back in the IDM days, yeah, RCA made ASICs for people too, but I got to tell you, that was not a cheap process. That was still a rich man's game. But with disaggregation came access and opportunity. The weird thing is, that's kind of, as you point out, is kind of run full circle. Now, because of the extreme expense of advanced process nodes, it's sort of becoming a rich person's game again. The big guys, Google, Amazon, Facebook, Alibaba, Baidu, Tencent, Tesla, you know, there's not that many to name, but they're generating a huge amount of the TAM for semiconductor worldwide. So it's kind of become more of a rich person sport again to build these chips. What's different is those chips are now doing different things like processing AI algorithms. And that, I think, is changing a lot in terms of how sexy chips become. So, you know, there's one trajectory for the business. There's another trajectory for the market, and they're a little different.
Yeah, I agree, Mike. Artificial intelligence is really going to be a life-changing technology moving forward. The easiest example is autonomous cars. It's just amazing for me to think that my grandchildren probably aren't going to have to learn how to drive because a car will just be summoned to the house and take them wherever they want to go, versus when we were growing up, getting a driver's license was a rite of passage. So it's going to be a big change and a very important one because it will not just save families enormous amounts of money, it will save lives. More than 38,000 people died last year in crashes in the United States, and an additional 4 to 5 million people were injured seriously enough to require medical attention. It's not just the pain and suffering, it's also the financial burden accidents put on families. Autonomous cars can reduce those numbers dramatically, absolutely. AI and semiconductors are also disrupting the medical industry in a good way. We can now do Zoom doctor visits instead of sitting in a waiting room with sick people. So far, all of my Zoom appointments have been on time, which is rarely the case for live visits. And if you add AI into the mix, the calls can be further analyzed to make sure nothing was missed. The same goes for x-rays, scans, and other medical tests. Having AI assisting healthcare professionals can also save lives.
It's the chips that made all this possible. I mean, I think a lot of people know that the artificial intelligence algorithms that are being used today for things like voice recognition and even autonomous driving, this stuff's been around a long time. This is not new. What is new is that there is now a medium to execute those algorithms on that actually can run in real time with low latency. So it's actually useful in the real world. And that semiconductor is doing that. So even if there are a relatively smaller number of companies building chips, as long as they're building chips that process AI algorithms, it will continue to make chips sexy and people will know more and more about the devices inside their gadgets because that's part of the differentiation of the device. You know, it's a good analogy is, you know, back in the old days, if you bought a car, you wanted to understand what engine was under the hood. You know, if you were a Chevy guy, it had to be 427 big block, not a 327 or whatever. Nowadays, we don't care because all cars run the same, again, thanks to semiconductor technology. But now it's become, what's under the hood of my cell phone? Do I have the latest processor from Apple? Do I have the latest processor from my gaming console? People actually care and they know. Not long ago, no one had a clue what any of that meant. Now they do. And that's adding to the sexiness and the excitement kind of at a worldwide level that semiconductors is creating.
Yeah, I think we all know what 3G, 4G, 5G means, right? I mean, I remember one time my kids were trying to explain something and my wife wasn't getting it. And one of my kids said, God, Mom, you're so 3G. It was kind of funny. Yeah. It was first time I heard semiconductor technology, you know, at my dinner table. It was pretty crazy. I think things are going to continue to be really wrapped around semiconductors. You know, they're already a critical part of modern day life. But you know, Mike, isn't it a concern that, you know, we're too semiconductor centric? I mean, for semiconductor professionals, you know, like ourselves, we're really happy about it. You know, for example, the pandemic, the semiconductor industry has boomed during the pandemic. You know, everybody's Zooming, and every time you turn on your video when you Zoom, which just about everybody does these days, you're consuming a huge amount of bandwidth. You're collecting a huge amount of data. You know, your clouds are just bursting with information, and that's why the semiconductor industry has, or the ecosystem has, really had a good year. And it'll continue to be that way because I don't think we're going to go back to normal where we're, you know, driving places. We're going to be Zooming instead. What happens if we have a serious semiconductor problem? For example, look at what's happening in China. The U.S. is cutting off, you know, the supply chain to China, semiconductors for this excuse or that excuse. I mean, politicians are actually saying the word semiconductors. I've never heard it before. It's kind of shocking. But really, you know, if you're cutting off the supply of semiconductors, is that an act of war? Because can you live without semiconductors?
Yeah, it's a good point. I think that there have been a lot of global conflicts around control of the flow of oil. I think there are going to be similar conflicts around the flow of semiconductors and technology because it is a critical enabling technology. And I suppose sort of like oil, it's manufactured or it comes from a small number of places on the planet. It doesn't come from everywhere. I mean, if you think about where the gigafabs are, they're not in they're not everywhere. They're only in a few places. So there are certain governments that are controlling the flow of the raw materials and the manufacturing, and there are other places that are controlling the innovation and the use of that technology. Sometimes they're the same, sometimes they're different. So that gives me hope because unless there's collaboration between those forces, everybody loses. So maybe this is another version of mutually assured self-destruction, is that if we don't work together, the whole thing collapses, so maybe it won't collapse. I'm an optimist, so that's kind of my point of view.
Yeah, that's my hope as well. Okay, let's stop here and mention some of our upcoming topics. Future topics include Moore's Law, is it really going to end? Data becomes the new oil. Chiplets are cheating. Innovations in cybersecurity. Are ASICs dead? Can China really become self-sufficient in semiconductors? Is the Intel setback temporary or terminal? COVID backlash for emerging technology companies. The new wave of semiconductor consolidation, where does it lead? And domain-specific versus general-purpose chips. Joining us in these podcasts will be industry experts from around the world. That concludes our introductory podcast. Thank you all for listening and have a great day. Thank you.